You are tuned into Business Sense on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.
Once upon a time, gaming lived in arcades and dusty cartridges, a pixelated escape for a niche few. Today, gaming is culture. It's cinema, sport, community, education, therapy, even identity. It's no longer just about playing. It's truly about building, streaming, storytelling, coding, investing, and dreaming. The global gaming industry now outpaces both film and music combined. It's shaping economies, reimagining entertainment, and creating entirely new job markets. But how did we get here? And more importantly, where are we going? To help us unpack this digital revolution is Justice Mukwebo, a biochemistry and microbiology graduate with a passion for the world of tech, innovation, and immersive storytelling. He's an award-winning GovTech CETA hackathon participant, a Telkom FutureMakers alumnus, and the creator of Tombolanga VR, a cutting-edge initiative using virtual reality to transform STEM education in South Africa. Justice's work sits at the crossroads of science, society, and scalable tech. He's not just here to play games. You see what I did there? He's building tools that educate, that empower, and expand what's possible for the next generation. Today, we go behind the scene to decode the evolution of gaming from Pong to the metaverse and everything in between. Justice, hello.
You said a mouthful. We might as well just stop the conversation now.
How are you?
I'm okay. And how are you?
I'm good, thank you. I know you are a friend of the station, but I've never spoken to you before, so I'm very excited to engage.
I'm also excited to hear the different voice today. And when I was told, I was like, oh, this is going to be interesting,
yeah,
as usual.
Let's dig in. Gaming started as entertainment. Now it's shaping everything from mental health interventions to military simulations. When did gaming stop being just play and become a platform for power?
I think we can just go back a bit and twist the part of entertainment, so we can say, because we can take it back to when computers were really used,
yeah,
right? Because computers were not really meant for us playing games, and they were meant for hardcore research. I don't know. I'm getting a bit of feedback. I don't know if it's affecting on your side.
No, we don't hear anything on our side.
Oh, okay. No problem.
But tell me if it intensifies.
Sorry?
Tell me if it intensifies so I know what I can do about it.
Okay.
Cool.
So I'm just kind of trying to shift just a little bit, because yes, we can say it's about entertainment, because the people that started with it were obviously thinking of entertainment at some point. You know, there's always that one guy
the rebel
back of the scene saying that this is going to be nice.
Yeah,
but if we go back to it, computers were just meant for hardcore research, making sure that they are able to calculate how their fighter jets will be able to fire missiles. You know, it was all about that, and you know, the space arrays, all those kind of hardcore mathematical research that was being done back in the days.
Yeah.
But after the World War II, there was something that was more interesting, because now these computers, for them to do proper research, obviously they needed scholars. And these scholars are mostly in universities and research labs. So that's where these big computers were, you know, like big, super big computers, which I feel like we're going back with our cell phones now, because our cell phones are becoming bigger again. So back in 1947, 1950s, when the World War was coming to an end, the Second World War, computers were now inside their universities.
Yeah.
So researchers continue to do some more research as to what else can we do with these computers. That came to the development of something called a cathode ray tube amusement device, which was not a video game, but it was something that led towards video games that we have today. which translate deep down into 1952 rather, in Britain, where a British professor by the name of Alexandra Sandy Douglas. I'm reading this name so I don't mess it up.
Okay.
So he created a game called, I don't know if I should call it 0x0 or not XO, which is more like a computerized version of something called a tic-tac-toe.
Okay.
Yeah, so this was the first video game, or more like a digital game that you can actually interact to. Or let me just say one of the first, because you never know what was not recorded or what I don't know about. And someone knows something, eh?
Yeah.
So this was one of the first games that we can, you know, talk about and say this was there. And it was not meant specifically for entertainment. He was doing a project.
Okay.
Now, in his PhD project, he wanted to find ways in which how you and I can interact with machines or like computers back in the day, because then computers were not really interacting much with people. They were just doing tasks that they were told to do.
Yeah,
so he developed this the game, which was one of the first, using this big electron delay storage automatic calculator, which was a computer back then, a very huge computer. Now this led to what we call games today.
Okay.
So one of the most intriguing part was for them to come up with how can we get this outside research labs and universities to normal day-to-day people that are outside living in the communities.
Yeah.
Like I say, there's always that one guy who was probably thinking of this thing can make money. And the researchers were like, nah, we can use it for something else.
Yeah.
And just building up context around it. So this is how it ended up being in the public, because the fight was, how can we get this outside? Because people could not afford these big, sophisticated computers. And you wouldn't even have space for it in your house because it was too big. So I reckon that the excitement and the amusement was just around the students and the people in the lab, and perhaps maybe the janitor who would actually clean around it. And, you know, he would just be happy that I'm next to something that is cutting edge. But it was not around the people. Yeah, but the curiosity, I believe it was there, and it was slowly turning into an innovation, which is what we
do. Yeah, you know what? I appreciate this history lesson. I can tell that I'm speaking to a true academic. And I think what it sounds like from what you're saying is gaming is going back to what it was. And maybe not gaming, but what we're seeing happening with the evolution of gaming is exactly what the whole concept was meant for anyway. Interesting. Now, when I think about games, right, or gaming globally, they often reflect Western mythologies, their languages and design styles. I'm curious to hear from you what decolonizing gaming actually looks like, and what happens when African creators start designing from our own myths, our own language and our own cosmologies.
What actually happens is it drives into the idea of innovation, right? It takes a typical Kasi gent to go out there and be out there known for what Kasi is all about. Because let's take a look at one of the guys who has been doing comics in the country.
Yeah.
I don't know if I should mention names.
Go ahead.
Yeah, Nuku Mashaba.
Okay,
for instance,
yeah.
Right? Let's take a look at that guy. He took the context of how typical Kasi people would be speaking in their own native language.
Yeah.
And it turned out into a big marketing platform, big comics that you and I would actually always watch from our cell phones, would go online to watch them.
Yeah.
So debugging that and turning it into an innovative site of how gaming could be from maybe, let's say, South Africa as it is, you know, removing it from the context of what it was in the beginning and how people created it.
Yeah.
It will just bring this sense of culture into it because of how we are, particularly if, let's say, we are following the blueprints of how they are made, but not following the culture that we are putting into the games. It takes, like I said, a typical Kasi guy into the world, or a typical Kasi lady into the world. It shifts the narrative of what gaming is all about and just bring the entire culture and the entertainment that you spoke about in the beginning.
Is there appetite? Do you think there's appetite for our stories and our narratives?
That one, we can actually relate it also to movies. Yes, there is appetite.
Okay.
It also depends on how we convey it. I mean, let's look at Black Panther. Black Panther just shows a serious appetite, African-centered content or African-centered stuff. It will just go back to how readily innovative we want to be and what we want to do and how we can get people to bite it. Let's take a look at Mixit. Mixit was, was known. It was like almost everywhere, and we had a bite for it. We were using it. Young people in the country were using it tremendously so. And had it not happened, whatever that happened to it, it was still going to be a thing today. And how even the people are going to, absorb it, particularly the people in the government and people in funding spaces. How are they going to support? Maybe then we can say that the appetite is there for the people, but there might not be appetite for the funders to fund what can happen.
Ah, I'm so glad you went there because I was going to say, when you think of a project like Black Panther, you see that a lot of money went into that. So maybe the issue isn't even appetite, but the budget or the funds to actually carry out the ideas that exist or reside in someone's brain, ekasi.
Yeah, that is true.
Now, the gaming industry is expected to surpass $320 billion this year. We're seeing job creation in things like esports, stream monetization, and indie dev markets. What are some of the untapped economic opportunities in gaming, particularly in Africa, that you can speak to?
Okay, so I think we can also, that one translates back to the careers that can also be there, which are part of the markets that people can tap into. Let me start with what is currently happening right now, virtual reality, which is the space that we are currently in, and also augmented reality. These things are not entirely new. They've been there in the market, but how people are grasping them and the constant development, which tends to be very much expensive for many, taking us back to the funding opportunities that might not be there for every person to grasp, or maybe the funding be there, but the consumer buy-in not there, like relating us back to the big computers that people could not afford to have them in their houses. So virtual reality is one of the spaces that has got a lot of growth opportunities for many people. Gaming, game testing, which many studios can actually have people to come and test their games. We have seen that in many aspects where there's a new game release, or maybe say FIFA, and then EA would host or collaborate with one of the big companies, and then there would be influencers there coming to play the games. That is another, opportunity
You
for
finna
people that
tell
are.
me I could go play a game and get paid?
Yes, I mean, just
What?
like you can be invited as a content creator, particularly those content creators that are streaming the games. Obviously, it's not going to be any kind of content creator. Apart if the game is maybe doing some fashion stuff, then they would invite a fashion person to come and play the game, obviously. But yeah, there are people making money doing that, just being invited to into spaces where they have to test things and or say a review about it. It could be from third market point of view. Maybe it's a company that sells those games in the country, and then they want someone to advertise their stuff. They will have to pop out some money for that.
It sounds like I might need to get into gaming, and I know just the person to help me
Now, I
to
know some people that can get you up and running, so
Ah, let's
you might
go.
as well that let us not say it here because you might lose your job quickly.
I'll ask them to edit that out. Now, games activate dopamine, right? They activate dopamine, narrative immersion, and reward loops. How has understanding player psychology changed the way games are designed today? And what can other industries actually learn from this entire practice?
I think in that regard, it translates back to also the potential risks as well that comes with it. Because games can be very much addictive if you use them a lot, and
This
if
is
you
true.
pay too much attention to, screen time and excessive screen time, which is maybe something that other people can pick up. There's a game that a lot of young people are playing right now, which is COD, right? Call of Duty. That game, it's on its own very much, it will keep you immersed into the game because you're interacting with people on the game. There's a lot of things that are happening, a lot of updates. You're shooting with the guns, you're moving around. I have a tech enthusiast guy, a friend of mine. He would consistently post about how he can make the game so much more addictive and so much nice. So those are some of the big things that other platforms can choose to use in the games. Because in the game, you can use earn coins, you can earn points in order for you to keep going. You can compete in World Cups. You can compete with just general people. You can grow in ranks just like you're in the military. So things like that keep people immersed and keep people active and wanting to come for more. Even though people are using their own data to play the game, it just keeps people coming for more.
Yeah.
You can sit on the game and just sit for hours.
This is so
and
true.
If other industries can adopt such thing that gives rewards for using their platforms, then I think that's something that can actually keep them running.
Yeah. And what it sounds like you're talking about now is getting into the space of gamification, right? So the concept of gamification. And we see this in fitness apps. We see this in school learning platforms. I remember when I had a course online, gamification was a huge thing, right? And in all honesty, life itself is being gamified. But I'm wondering, because of its addictive nature, everyone wants to win. Everyone wants to progress to the next level. What are the ethics of this trend? And where do we draw the line between play and manipulation?
I think that goes towards the person. You need to be a person that is able to balance your time. Because let me be a bit controversial and say the games themselves are not addictive. It's how you use them that gets you addicted.
That because is debatable. I don't know a game that is not addictive. Something as little as Block Blast.
Yeah, okay. I played the game, right?
Okay. But,
I don't play it. Oh, it's always on my phone, but I don't play it.
Ish.
I only play it when I'm with my younger brother. That then becomes peer pressure because I see them playing and having fun.
Yes.
And then I just take out my phone and play because I can play. You know, so I don't think that can be deemed as addictive because I am the one who kind of started playing it before then.
You're the better human of us all.
Do I guess
you're better than most of us? Congratulations.
No, but if we could put it in context, a friend of mine plays the game a lot, but then you still see him posting about different things.
Yeah.
And he's very much more of a player than I am and than my brothers are, who also I've seen them as hard players. So I don't know if I can say that they're actually addictive.
Yeah.
But how you use them over time, that can be the problem.
And are there any ethics? Are there any ethics that govern gamification as a whole?
Yeah, there are ethics, particularly when we are moving into this era where you are putting a lot of information, a lot of your information to register, because most games you're playing them online.
For sure.
Right. So then we start to involve your cybersecurity. We start to involve regulatory boards that do regulate how information is spread across the board and how you are interacting with the game and how the game is. Because obviously, a game that is considered to be harmful, it would have, you know, those stickers on it to show that this game is indeed harmful and children under this set age are not supposed to play it. So that's where the ethical part of it kicks in.
Ah.
And to show that this is not meant for these people, this is meant for these people.
Got you.
The information that is spread across the border.
Yes,
people still try to bypass it and still hear little kids. You can tell from the voice that this is a young kid playing the game.
Yeah. People like breaking rules. It's nice to bend and break rules. So I get it.
Really.
Now, I wanted to talk about gaming and globalization. We see things like Fortnite concerts, Roblox fashion shows, and African-themed indie games winning global awards, right? What does this tell us about the growing intersection between digital culture and local identity?
This one is, for me, I just feel like there's no stopping the growth of this kind of tech stuff, and more especially when it comes when they're mixed with pop culture and the culture that we are currently in at the moment, and how it's shifting. For as time goes on, there will be a serious buy-in of, like you asked the question about the Kasi people,
yes,
right, and translating it back, debugging how it is from the outside or where it comes from, bringing it back to our people or to the roots where we are.
Yeah.
As time goes on, there will be people that will be participating in, how can I put it, in changing or growing with, let me change, changing the kind of content that is spread across these major games, your Fortnite and other and other games that are there at the moment. There will be a continuous mix and share. There would be a continuous two-way part where gaming becomes part of the culture and the culture becomes part of the game. There will just be a whole lot of new thing that is going to be continuously happening, particularly when we are looking at the current era where there are a lot of young people that are pursuing tech and science as it is, more especially the tech part of it. There will be people that will see loopholes and they will try to, you know, fit in the gaps. And when you're fitting in the gaps, you're obviously going to do it as part of the culture
100%.
That is currently happening.
100%.
We can also look at the movies that are inspired by the games. A lot of movies, the Tomb Raiders, your Sonic the Hedgehog, Detective Pikachu. There's a whole lot of them that are inspired. So culture and it and the gaming world, as long as the gaming is involving, the culture will be changing with it and they will be moving together.
Interesting. When I hear you say this, I'm like, I don't want Africa to be left behind. And so I'm curious to hear from you, what's missing in the African gaming ecosystem? Is it infrastructure? We already spoke about investments. Is it narrative representation, audience access? What is it that is missing, and what? How can we plug those holes? What do you believe will actually unlock the next level of our continent's gaming future?
I think it's, basically the first thing is what you just mentioned, which we talked about, the support.
Yeah.
Because there is so many tech enthusiasts out there that are trying to build something new and trying to fit into the systems that are currently existing, but there is not much support, because obviously where we come from, the narrative is that gaming is just a waste of
time. It's a waste of your brain.
Yeah, but then if we talk about what you mentioned in the beginning, it's a multi-billion brand industry, which is consistently growing, right? From the get-go until today. Developers are still needed to take part. Developers who are not just going to be thrown themselves or immerse themselves in the culture of where gaming comes from and how other people are doing, but bringing their minds back to creating games that speaks to us as a continent or us as a country. I mean, it would be nice to, you know, gamify things that we already used to play. I mean, let's talk about that tic-tac-toe that was the first game or the first video game. It was not something that was not there before. It was just a digitization of a game that already existed, which can translate back to a culture of where it comes from, and it will have rich history. So the history has been translated into the digital space and it continues. Talk about esports, right? We need more of these hubs in communities, in schools, where learners can learn about this kind of technology and how they can utilize it. Content creation. I know this is part of the thing that many parents don't like their kids to do, and for obvious reasons, right? But opening them into a world of marketing or digitization so they can learn how to do content creation and still have the academics on the side. These are some things that needs to be learned. Game design and storytelling. Games that, you know, remember when we were growing up, our grandfathers and mothers used to tell us stories. Those things can be games that can be played, right? Gamification in education, which is the space that we are in ourselves, doesn't have a lot of people in it. And a lot of people, including us, who are also trying to refine and grow and make other things. Some people are still doing the same thing over and over again. So if we can have people that are now trying to find solution, even if you're using something existing, but use it in your African context to grow and solve African problems, then we will see a lot of buy-in from other people that are outside there. And not just there. I mean, parents can also look into allowing their kids to do game marketing and community management, business in gaming, you know, localizing the cultural adaptation that is there, like translation, like I mentioned, filling the gaps. Because as time goes on, there are people that are solely speaking their own native language and they don't want to change that. And they are living a good life. So you need translators who will translate a simple game to speak in the language that they understand. That is another niche market that is also very important, and particularly in education, right? And other careers that are there that needs gamification to exist in them, also retaining the cultural aspect of who we are. I think if we can do that, I just pray that we'll have a total buy-in of investors, because these things are expensive. Like you mentioned, the metaverse in the beginning, having a pair of goggles is very expensive.
It's expensive.
Not everyone can afford them.
Yeah.
Only a selected few can afford them, or you know. And if it's not afforded by a lot of people, we need to come up with ways in order to reduce those things or build our own systems that a lot of people can be able to use them until the day that everyone can afford. Hopefully that day will come.
This is so interesting. And two thoughts come to mind. You know, even before you went in to expand on just the whole gamification thing, I was thinking about all the games I used to play as a kid. Umgusha, Chicago.
Imagine playing that on VR.
Exactly. I'm sitting here thinking, I'm sleeping on heritage that could actually make so much money. And, you know, not apart from just the money aspect. We always say, these kids don't know anything. We used to play in the streets until the polo light went on. And, you know, it was time for you to go back home. And here I'm thinking there are devices that has taken them away from the streets, but we can still fortify them with that culture. We can still give them a taste of what we used to experience.
Yeah, that is true. Imagine playing 24 back.
Squid Game. And I'm even thinking now about how, while it wasn't gamification, but like Squid Game had that idea, right, of actually playing those games in a controlled setup.
I think you should also consider watching a movie called Ready Player One. It also immerses people to virtual reality, because the whole game, the whole movie is about a kid that was playing with an avatar on virtual reality, as well as Guy. It's called Guy. It's about a guy who was an NPC in the game. He was meant to do something in the game, just basic stuff, but he gained conscious in the game. And those are just some interesting movies that can actually open up the mind into what the world of gaming is all about.
What did you say the movie is?
There is Ready Player One and Guy.
Got it. Yeah. But now I'm thinking, if somebody is sitting there and they want to steal my idea and execute before me and literally use virtual reality for all of these games we used to play as kids, where do they begin? How do they mobilize and execute on this?
All these things are about moving fast. Remember Pong, the one that you mentioned in the beginning, that was created by Atari, right? Which is one of the most interesting shift of how the American part of gaming and running things shifted to the Japanese. They created Pong, these guys, the Japanese guys, with their Audacity console. So what they were always doing was innovating.
Yeah.
But then as time goes on, when they introduced consoles, there were a lot of people that were replicating their consoles and also being in everything that they were doing was just Pong inspired, which kind of almost make the arcade fail during the time. So if you and I are talking right now, it's all about patenting stuff.
Like
you need to patent your stuff, though there will be always be people that are going to be moving fast in innovating.
For sure.
Doing a patent is very expensive. In a space where you might not have even the funds to generate your game or to, you know, to do the 24 back, you need to move fast. You need to have more offering. You need to consistently innovate, and so that your game can evolve and become so big to a point that you can patent the coming ideas that comes later, because all these things are very expensive, to be honest, but it's all about patenting your idea and making sure that any person that would come to try and steal it, they know that when you do a lawsuit in the next 10 years, you will come out right. But apart from that, it's all about moving fast. There's a guy that once told me, the guy that did one of the innovations in the country, a driver, he said to me, I asked him the same question, how do I protect my idea? And then he said to me that sometimes you shouldn't worry much about protecting it. You should worry much about moving as fast as you can and innovate so that you can get a quick buy-in. Because you can innovate, you can protect it, only to find that in the next 2 years
it's not even viable.
No one is buying into it. But then again, I'm not shying away from the fact that people should patent their stuff. You should patent your stuff if you have got a clear vision towards it and protect it.
Yeah. Earlier you spoke about how parents should consider just allowing their kids to explore this world, right? And possibly even carve careers out for themselves. Why? What is the value proposition? What is the selling point for why gamification is actually something to take seriously?
Look at our country. Our country, I always say, whenever I get a chance to say something about this, is that our country is South Africa. We are living in this consistent changing industrial era, right?
Mm.
But physically, most of us are still back.
Oh, for sure.
So imagine if a young person can take advantage of this opportunity and try to solve such problems, you know, in between. Imagine solving the second industrial revolution in a country that is perceptually living in the fifth industrial revolution. Not to say that part of our country is already advanced, but most of our countrysides are not advanced at all. So there's room for innovators to innovate and start something new. Because now we are having all this industrial revolution. All that we have to do is to take what is already ahead and bring it back, change it into our own South African context and make it adaptable and consumable for our own people.
Yeah.
The reason why I also say that parents should allow the kids to, you know, explore is because the world is changing. It's no longer the same curriculum that we are going to school for.
Yeah,
we're going there to learn the skills, right? To learn how to become who the system wants us to be. But we need to open our minds into diversifying. You know, you can be, like I mentioned, you can be a business person doing your business studies at school, but then you're opened into the tech world. That means you can help the tech innovators to manage their innovative businesses. You can be in physiotherapy, but then you're opened into the tech industry. Then you can take whatever that you learn, create a 24 bag and make sure that someone who is inventing a 24 bag game that translates to how we used to play as kids, do it in a way that when someone is playing the game, really get the exercise they need. You know, so opening up their mind into this tech industry will just help the kids to also be innovative in terms of seeing how the world is changing. They may not be gamers, but they may be part of the gaming industry in different ways.
And I guess it's also just allowing them to apply their minds to something that would otherwise erode it if all they did was just sit and game, right? So it's capitalizing on what they're doing already.
Yeah, very true. I mean, instead of spending all that money by going out and doing other things that the child might not enjoy, if the child has got a zeal for playing games, buy them a console that and give them internet, they can start streaming when they're not, when the school closes or during the free time, that you can channel that gaming time the child has and then, you know, ensure that the kid does something for themselves as they go on, or just open them to coding so they can start developing games, you know, because there's a whole lot of things that are currently happening. And if the parents keep this, if we keep this gaming like away and say that it's just delaying you and not help the child manage how they use it, they were going to play games anyway.
For sure. Now, we find AI-generated games, NFT-based in-game economies, neuro-gaming. What tech trend currently blows your mind the most? And how do you think it will redefine the game experience? Or the gamer experience, rather?
I'm immersed into virtual reality.
Okay.
I don't want to lie. Virtual reality is nice. Virtual reality just pushes me to... It pushes you to want to be there, you know. You just want to be there. Gary, you could just ask Mudimu, please, Can I just have my nighttime on on the virtual reality, then I'll be back when they need me.
And it's a nice escape. It's like reading a book, but more sophisticated.
Yes. Yeah. So that is one thing that I feel like it's always going to be a bit cutting edge because of how expensive it is until we get a way to make it cheaper for everyone to grasp it or for everyone to get an opportunity to have it. Because right now it's in the malls. Every time you walk in the mall,
this
you
is see, true.
It's always packed.
Yes.
There by those aisles where young people will want to play the games there.
Yeah.
And us for on our side developing systems that are going to assist in STEM education. Mm. It's just a whole new world that hopefully soon will be able to show the world how it looks like and South Africa how it looks like and solve the problems.
Yeah.
So for me, I'm just immense in VR and how it's moving. It's just that the buy-in is not as much in terms of gaming because of how expensive it is. Mm. I don't know how many times I've said the word expensive.
Because it truly is. We have to bring the whole conversation into context.
Yeah. So that's the only I think takeaway factor that shies us away from the world of VR.
Mm.
But we're doing something and we're gonna make sure that Tombolanga does deliver to a point that the country and the children in the country and in the continent are able to enjoy VR in a cheaper way or augmented reality.
And let's park there. I actually love that you brought the conversation there because how you interact or engage with VR is not the same as everybody else. You spoke about malls and I know those little chairs that you sit on and you're playing a game. You're in the sky. There's a roller coaster. I know those, right? But you're not using it for that. You are actually using it to advance STEM education. And I'd love for you to tell people exactly how you're doing that and how you've seen it change the game. Excuse the pun.
I mean, I had a pun somewhere here written, and I am good that I found my pun buddy. It was about internet, that how console gaming changed the game. So yeah. Anyway, let's move back to the question that you asked me. So what we are currently doing is I grew up in a community where there was no laboratories in my community. The laboratories that were there were university, the nearest university, but we didn't have access to it.
Mm.
And there's a lot of schools around. So every time I would do my experiment, it would always remain theoretical and not practical.
Yeah.
So I would have to write down everything and, you know, write down that the experiment is going to go down this way, but not get to a point where I do that.
Mm.
And it's still the case for many other young people and millions of South African young scholars, high schoolers that are out there, and even those that are in varsity, but now they've got an opportunity to be in the lab. So what we are doing, we entered into the STEM field and we doing virtual laboratories for young people to be able to use them in the language that they understand.
Oh, that's beautiful.
In a way that they can be able to grasp it, coming from someone who went through the same story, sharing the story through the virtual platforms in order for all the young people that do not have laboratories in their schools, in townships, in rural areas, in all those places that look forgotten or that feel left out, TVET colleges that are not properly or having all the equipments that they need to have. That is what we are tapping into. And at the moment, it's been amazing. It's been good. We've been part of different environments that has exposed us to more of resources that we can be able to utilize. And soon we'll be doing our delivery and with hopes that it will be adopted the way we anticipate that it will be adopted.
Oh, I love this so, so much. Brilliant, brilliant work. Now, let me give you one last question before we get into a game of our own.
Mm-hmm.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right. So the last question that I have for you is, what's the one thing about gaming that the average non-gamer doesn't know but absolutely should?
Gaming is an escape, a serious escape to a world of fantasy, to a world of dreams, to a world of happiness and a world of peace, if I can put it that way.
Interesting.
Yeah, if I can put it that way. I don't know if you wanted me to expand it.
No, so I'm thinking about games like FIFA and all of those, and I'm like, they take on our reality so much. So I'm wondering how much of it is actually an escape if it I guess emulates or simulates our actual life?
It's an escape because take a look at the person who plays FIFA. Let me put it in that context, right? How much they just want to go home, relax, escape reality and all the traumas and all the inflations in the country and all the problems that are happening, just to sit down and play a game.
Yeah,
and also look at it in a context of someone that is actually making a living out of it, right? That person is in an escape, is in their own zone where the only thing that they're worrying about is making sure that they beat the next player, not the things that are happening in this world.
Yeah.
I mean, let's look at it. There's a lot happening that you and I are facing on a daily basis.
For sure.
But just a swift moment of just looking at your phone, you escape the reality for 2 minutes. We all need that relaxation.
This is true.
Unless if it becomes an addiction, then that's a problem.
And I'm even thinking about the anxiety that heightens every time a game is on television. And I'm thinking about how I think that the actual, not the roots, but what drives that anxiety is that you're on the other side of the world. The ball is being kicked by other people. But in a FIFA game, you've got some control. So I can imagine that the anxiety doesn't heighten as much when you're playing with your buddy because you're right there in the game.
Yo, I think it does.
That is not an escape. What are you guys doing? What are you guys doing?
No, I think it does. Because one of the key things that makes me not to play a lot of games is losing. I don't like losing. So I will choose specific games that I am able to like toggle through. Or maybe if it's a new game.
Then you're not playing. You're not playing then. Because there's no... You're not letting your head down. You're not... You're even academic, even in your gaming.
The ego of losing to a computer. And perhaps maybe if I'm playing against a buddy of mine, then it would be just fun. And but those games that you have to play alone.
You don't like that.
Getting shut down by a computer. But all in all, it's interesting. I think that's actually nice because apart from all the other downside of things when it comes to, you know, to games, they do help a lot of people to increase their cognitive behaviors, to be innovative, to be like, how do you call it, to be strategic in the way you're thinking.
Yeah.
But playing games like the one I talked about, COD, or maybe the GTAs. Those games, they make you think because now you feel like you're in the real world and you are moving and in a space that you can be shot down or you have to drive fast or you have to solve a puzzle. You know, those things are very much good for normal people or on a day-to-day basis or maybe once a week. As a sort of like escape from your normal work, because some people we are doing same things at work every day, but then you get home, you just sit down and you immerse yourself into your gaming story and it takes you to places.
Okay, let's play our game. Play or pass. Okay? So sorry? I'll throw out, it's called play or pass. So
play or pass.
I'll throw out short prompts and you must either say play, meaning you're here for it, or pass, nope, not vibing, right? And you must also give one sentence explanation. Nothing more. I don't want paragraphs. Just one one sentence explanation. Okay. So here's the first prompt. Esports in schools. Play or pass?
Play.
Okay. VR in therapy. Play or pass?
A super play.
Okay. You didn't give me the explanation for the esports. And I'm more curious about this one. Let's talk about the esports one in school. Why play?
Okay.
One sentence, justice.
Okay.
Okay, let me not restrict you. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, we said one sentence. I'm trying to reduce it. Yo, the brain is moving 120,000 kilometers an hour. It's good because of schools that do not have proper infrastructures, they can do esports.
Mm-hmm. Love it. VR in therapy, you said a definite play.
Yes. VR immerses you into a world where it's open for you to be whatever you want to be. Sometimes a therapy cannot help you with that.
So what do you think it looks like? Are you then in a family that does not have, like, are you seeing a family that does not have a toxic or an abusive father and you're there in that world seeing how it could look like? What does it look like in your mind?
I think it's just how the therapy would actually build it up to be. Like, such experiences need to be felt, not, help you to imagine them. You need to at least see them, because sometimes people cannot imagine things because of trauma. But the VR can help them to, like, immerse them into that world that they're talking about.
Oh, now I'm gonna go down the rabbit hole of VR in therapy because it sounds so amazing for me. Okay,
But you
this is
should
your
be with a
game.
therapist, please.
Yes, this is your game. Let's continue. AI generated storytelling in games, play or pause?
I pass.
Okay, tell me why.
I mean, it's taken away from the creatives. I mean, let's have AI have some regulation. Yeah, not
Okay,
there.
so you believe we are like innately we have the ability to tell stories without AI assisting us.
I mean, AI learned from
This
us
is
to
true.
be AI,
This
so
is true. Okay, I hear you. I hear you.
we're still good,
Yeah,
so
yeah. In-game advertising, play or pause?
sorry.
In-game advertising.
Play.
I was hoping you'd say pause. Tell me why.
Gaming industry is very big. There's a
Yeah.
lot of people there,
Yeah.
so that gives room to advertisers to be there and advertise.
I disturbs the game, man. I think I've just got issues with advertising generally because I'm also the person that pays for YouTube because I don't want the ads.
Oh, you pay premium.
I'm a premium girl, okay?
Yeah.
The next one. Daily quest for real life productivity apps. Play or pause?
Pass.
How? Why?
I don't know, man. I think quests. Let sometimes life be life, man. Hey,
But some people need it. Come on, Justice. We're not
yeah,
all as disciplined as
okay, play
you.
for those and the pass for those that don't need it. Sometimes, you just want to go through the day and go home and relax.
I hear you. I hear you.
Can't be ticking boxes all the time. Ah, it's too
I
stressful.
hear you. Okay, the next one. Mobile gaming as Africa's biggest platform. Play or pause?
That's a play.
Tell
That's
me
the first
why.
thing Africans see. Like,
Yes.
we don't have a whole lot of these sophisticated systems. Not everyone has a PS3, a PS5, VR goggles. The first thing you see is your cell
I love that.
phone.
NFTs in gaming, play or pause?
Play, I
Okay,
guess.
tell us
Yeah.
why.
I think it just opens a new us to more innovations. Let me just put it that way. Yeah, it keeps us going.
Okay, I'm very curious
Because
about.
everyone is going to hate it at some point, and then some people will want to create something better. So, yeah.
I'm very curious about what your answer will be for this one. African folklore as triple A gaming narrative. Play or pause?
That one I'm not sure about. Yeah, that one, I think, let me hold it to myself for now.
Okay. When you come
Yeah.
back, I want the answer. The first thing I'm going to say, remember what he promised us, guys?
Yeah, because I know there's someone listening who's
Of
gonna
course.
give me restless
Of
nights now.
course, of course. And the final one I want to throw out is pay to win games. Play or pause.
Play to win games. That's yeah, that's a play. Yeah.
Got it. Got
And we can't
it.
be wasting our time playing,
No,
eh?
no, 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 no. You
We
can't do
need some things. I mean, they
that.
took our coins a lot during arcade, and they still do now. So
Yes.
might as well get some of those coins
We
back.
have to get paid back our money. Oh man, you know what? This conversation illuminated so much for me. It really got me to realize that gaming is no longer the thing your cousin did in the corner with the console. It's really a multiverse of possibility. It reshapes how we learn, how we earn, how we heal, and how we imagine. I think you heavily emphasized the idea of imagining and innovating, using our minds through something that would otherwise we would have never guessed it could get to that, right? It's basically an entire economy. It's art, it's identity, it's power. And I'm so glad that you reminded us today that behind every controller is really a creator. And behind every pixel is a possibility. And definitely that behind every game is a story that is worth telling. And I'm so glad that you were here to have this conversation with us today. Thank you so, so much.
No, thank you very much. It was nice talking to you as well. And thank you for the listeners that were part of the conversation.
We'll see you next time because you love us so much.
Definitely.
Cheers, Justice. Thank you. Have a lovely evening.
Good night.
That's it, folks. Gaming is no longer the thing your cousin used to do in the corner. I hope you got that. And you know what? Whether you're a seasoned gamer or a curious observer or a creative itching to code your own reality, I want this to be something that you remember. The game is no longer out here. It's truly in your heart and in your mind. The next evolution won't just be about tech. It will be about truth. And if Africa dares to play, we might just lead. Until next time, I am Nompumelelo Mbonani, and I hope you've just made sense of your business. Fresh mercies tomorrow. Ciao for now.
Adventist World Radio, SID Media. We are not general practitioners. We are specialists in Bible-based content.